from Variety, celebrating more than 115 years covering the business of entertainment. This is the Award Circuit Podcast.
And I thought it was really important that we show that she has dreams as well, that it's not just her caring for Ptolemy, that she has her own autonomy over her body and her choices and what she cares about. And so by her name, I just decided that she wanted to be an astronomer, because Robin, obviously birds fly, but she had so much trauma in her life that flying in a plane across country just wouldn't be far enough. So as a child, she would imagine going into a rocket ship and blasting off into space and maybe meeting her own ET and finding home. But before she can leave, she finds her own extraterrestrial being in Ptolemy, in a way, because his mind is on different timelines and yeah. Such.
Dominique Fishback came up with a deep backstory for her character Robin in Apple TV Plus's The Last Days of Ptolemy Gray. I'm Michael Schneider, and on this edition of the Variety Awards Circuit Podcast, Dominique Fishback is here to talk about The Last Days of Ptolemy Gray and working with the one and only Samuel L. Jackson. Later in this episode, Mr. Mayor star Bobby Moynihan on the joys of his ensemble comedy. It's all next on this edition of the Variety Awards Circuit Podcast. Stay close. Based on Walter Mosley's novel, The Last Days of Ptolemy Gray stars Samuel L. Jackson as the title character, an old man who is suffering from dementia and on the brink of sinking even lower when a teenage orphan, Robin, played by Dominique Fishback, winds up caring for him. The two form an unshakable bond as he undergoes a treatment that might improve his mental state and uses this precious and fleeting lucidity to solve his nephew's death and come to terms with his past. This leads them on a journey that reveals shocking truths and allows Robin to chart a path to her future.
I left, but not before I kept my promise. Followed the path, I followed his every direction. Found Cora's treasure, 14 stolen gold pieces.
So, these coins?
Doubloons. Doubloons. Is what they is, like pirate treasure.
Okay, these doubloons, they're worth real money.
Sure is.
All right, so you said there was 14 and I only see two.
You know, Cynthia, she like pretty things. You know, jewelry, that little comb you like. And hundreds or so silk dresses.
Of course you ain't spent this money on impressing her.
Celebrating her.
Fishback earned raves for her role in the critically acclaimed film Judas and the Black Messiah about the efforts of the FBI to undermine Black Panther leader Fred Hampton in 1960s Chicago. She's also known for her role in the HBO shows The Deuce and Show Me a Hero, as well as the Netflix film Project Power. In his review for Variety, Joshua Alston wrote that it's no small feat to stand up to Jackson in what is essentially a two-hander, and Fishback never shrinks from the challenge. Their chemistry is so potent that it's always in the foreground. I spoke with Fishback about landing the role opposite Jackson, working with the superstar, as well as her take on the character, playing young roles, and how she's enjoying her success. I began by asking her about the reaction to Ptolemy Gray.
Just that that Sam and I are really great scene partners together, and that I hold my own, which is obviously a big compliment. Because it's Samuel Jackson. So it's cool to because that's not what I was thinking about when I was going into it. I've been asked were you nervous or anything like that? And I wasn't really nervous because Robin is not nervous of Ptolemy.
Right.
She's not intimidated by him. So therefore, I'm not going to do that because I'm representing this character.
Yeah, she's the opposite. She kind of brings some law and order to the mix.
Yeah. As soon as she comes in, it's like watching the second episode. She comes in and he's like, don't touch my things. And I feel everybody in his life has allowed him to say, don't touch my things. And so they leave it because he's going to react. And she's like, no, I'm not going to let you do this. And he's yelling and he's doing this and she's yelling right back. And yeah, it's a cool dynamic.
Well, there's the show is so interesting to me because it's got so many different elements at play. So you've got that relationship between your character and Sam's character. You've got sort of the mystery. You've got some sci-fi elements to it. You've got, you know, issues of age. I mean, there's a lot going on this show. What did you sort of first make of it when you first were approached with it?
To be honest, I didn't know if it was the right next move for me. because I had just come off of doing a lot of press for Judas and Black Messiah. And with a character like Debra Johnson, although she was still a teenager, she was forced to grow up a little bit quicker. And so she had a very maternal instinct. So we're a very like wife kind of woman-ness to her that I often don't get to play because I play so young on TV, which I love. But it was like, do I go a different direction? Do I not go back to like teenagers or whatever? But Sam, he said that he knew he wanted me from seeing Project Power with Jamie Foxx, and he called about it. And so to like hear that is like, okay, well, let me take a closer look. And then I read the scripts and I read the novel, and the novel just really blew my mind.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, first off, when Samuel L. Jackson calls you and says, I want to work with you, you just say yes, right? Like, is that just like an automatic, like, of course, or you have to switch?
I mean, I think you would think so. I think you would think so. Like, I think if you'd have asked me like 10 or 5 years ago, I'd be like, yeah, you just like, you know, kind of do it. But then again, I don't know if that's true. I've been very like particular, like what's my heart say?
Yeah.
You know, cause I rather work with the people that I admire when I love a project and I love a character and I know that I could bring something special to it. I never want to do something just because somebody else that I love and want to work with is doing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it has other elements to it because control your experience of it, or like just knowing that you did it for this reason that was beyond working with somebody you admire.
Well, you have, obviously the Sam Jackson element of it, but then Walter Mosley, who is, you know, such an artist, and such a prolific, I mean, just an amazing author. And how much did you know about his work? How many of his, like, had you read many of his novels? What sort of was your sort of entryway to Walter Mosley?
You know, my entryway was Last Days of Tommy Gray. I didn't read that. I love to read, but I love to read more like self-help books, you know, like the dynamic laws of prosperity and The Power of Now and those kind of books. So I hadn't read his novels. Excuse me. I haven't read The Last Days of Tommy Gray, but when I read the first and second episode, and then I read the third and fourth, and then I finished them, and I was like, dang, it's missing something. Like, I know that the show is not going to be the same as the book, but the book just has so many gems, so much beautiful language, so much truth to the characters and truth to Robin that I felt we really needed to have in the show. And so I made this 28-page PDF that I sent to Sam and Walter, just kind of explaining who I unpacked Robin to be via the novel, but also the ideas that was inspired. So, for example, in a novel, Robin and Ptolemy kind of have like a little bit more of a romantic or questionable kind of love for each other. And although we weren't going to go in that direction, I brought up, like, I took stills of Natalie Portman in The Professional when she's like, I think I'm falling in love with you, Leon. And he like spits the milk out, because I wanted us to still have that little like teeter, like, boy, does she love him like that? You know, like, I just wanted it to be more well-rounded as the book was.
Yeah. So you sent the PDF. What was the reaction? What how'd Sam and Walter react?
Sam was like really impressed. And then we met and I kind of walked him through what I was thinking and why I was picking the things that I was picking. And then Walter as well, just got on the Zoom with him and just spoke about how we could bring those things back. I mean, Robin in the novel doesn't have a scar, but in this one she does, because I really wanted something that said she's not to be messed with before she even opens her mouth. Like that idea of show, not tell. And how does that help the story? How does that help the experiences that she's had or that she's shared with Ptolemy? You know, yeah. I also like used her name to find out what she wanted to do. We didn't really know her dreams. And I thought it was really important that we show that she has dreams as well, that it's not just her caring for Ptolemy, that she has her own autonomy over her body and her choices and what she cares about. And so by her name, I just decided that she wanted to be an astronomer, because Robin, obviously birds fly, but she had so much trauma in her life that flying in a plane across country just wouldn't be far enough. So as a child, she would imagine going into a rocket ship and blasting off into space and maybe meeting her own ET and finding home. But before she can leave, she finds her own extraterrestrial being in Ptolemy, in a way, because his mind is on different timelines and such. And kind of built things like that throughout the PDF.
I love that. I love Thank that. You. And I love that. I love that you had sort of the insight to do that and not just sort of settle for, you know, what, you know, your character was given to you, but to say, no, I know who this person is.
Yeah. Well, just making sure that, like, I spoke to everybody before, just saying, like, well, you know, I'm a very collaborative actor. I love to, like, have discussions. I never think just because I have an idea that it's supposed to be taken or, but I just like the conversation. Yeah. I started acting and writing when I was 15. They went hand in hand. And so I do feel like I have a kind of inkling to storytelling in a way. And I love to journal as my characters and find out their insides. And I'm always willing to share because maybe it'll find a whole other dynamic that we didn't even know existed.
Yeah. No, that's great. I mean, everyone has a different style. So how did you kind of evolve sort of like how you approach acting and does it come out? It sounds like maybe some of it comes out of some of the self-help books that you read.
Oh, 100%. I love, well, see, I'm a huge fan of astrology and like the top three, I don't know if you heard of them, like the ascending or rising, the sun sign that we all know, and then there's a moon. So even using my own personal life and what I've researched or come to know about the signs, I applied that to Robin. So I gave her her own birth chart, her own time of birth, place, date. And it turned out that she's a Scorpio, which I thought was kind of interesting that it tied into who she was in the story, right? Like she's very protective. She has, it's very secretive. When it comes to like death and emotion, she's very like, you can't really see. She's like, they died. And it's very much, she doesn't let you in like that unless she really knows you. The rising is like her, like she's a Leo rising, which means she's the lion. They're the sun. They're the warmth, but she'll ferociously fight for what she cares about and who she cares about. And we kind of see that in the second episode with the neighborhood woman and Ptolemy. And then the moon is your inside, is what only the closest people to you know. And her moon is a Libra. So that's where that balance and that justice comes into and how she cares for him and how she cares about what he thinks and where he is.
Okay, so we know about Robin, your character. What about Dominique? What about you? Tell me about sort of your signs and how that informs just what you do. Yeah. You know, the jobs you choose, sort of how you approach acting, your life.
Well, honestly, I think astrology led me to meditate and kind of find out the truth about what I feel underneath any social conditionings that I might have had growing up or that I've placed on top of myself. And so even that, like learning that I could potentially have a hard exterior because of where I grew up and where I come from, but really I'm just like mushing inside and I'm really lovey-dovey and I want to be that. But yeah, in order to be those things, you have to feel protected. You know, and I think that that's what Robin represents. And that's why I love her arc in the story so much, because she does start with that hard exterior, but as she softens as you go on, but it's not unwarranted. She softens because she has somebody who says, I don't need nothing from you or your body. You know, I just love your company and I want you to feel loved. And that way she's able to soften and smile and float and be who she probably always was inside before the world got on top of her.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of the same for me. And I've always journaled as a kid, and that helps me to like find out how I truly feel about something. And I do that with my characters. And so they kind of have a mix of that.
Do you ever go back to your old journals? Do you ever reread what you wrote what do you make of young Dominique now?
Honestly, I'm so proud of her. Sometimes I'm like, dang, can I talk to her again? Because that's how I pick my roles as well. It's very hard, especially as you become more visible and you have like a track record, and now you're like, oh, how do you pick the next thing? What's the right thing? I kind of just say, well, the only thing you could do is one, trust God, but also just trust my inner self, my inner child. I feel she's the compass. When I was growing up, I didn't think about critics and what they would like or not like about me or audiences. I just knew I loved the characters and wanted to be on TV. And I wanted to be able to do anything of any genre, just wanted to be well-versed and versatile. And so that's how I'm picking the next things. What childhood dream does it kind of cross off, right? For example, going from Judas to Transformers, right? That's like not what we may think, But I know that I've always had an affinity for the Black Panther Party. I care about history so much. It's one of my favorite subjects. But also, I love like big movies and Transformers since I was a kid watching that and imagining that I could be in that place. So I want to be able to do all the things that my young heart always dreamed about.
Yeah, absolutely. And you still have a young heart. Now, you mentioned that you still play a lot of young characters. Yeah. Is that... Do you like doing that? Do you find that you're sort of like, okay, I'm ready to play older now, or what's?
No, I love it. I love it. I honor teenagers. I think they're the best. So I love it, and I thank God that I still look young. You know what I'm saying? So that I can do all of these things. I think what I would like is to show, because in my real life I'm like that, but like to just be more fluid. Like, you know, not just teenager. If I could do teenager, then 30 and then come back teenager and keep going, like, do all that stuff, then that's, I love it. I welcome it.
Yeah. Embrace it as long as you can. You're going to be glad you did one day.
Yes.
So we talked a little bit about working with Samuel L. Jackson, but you know, what would we be maybe most surprised about about him or working with him? What did you find? What were you expecting it would be like to work with him? And then what was it actually like to, I mean, again, you're sparring with him on screen. That's pretty amazing.
I think I had expectations. I think I haven't been in the industry so long, but when you don't have too many expectations, you can't get let down. You know what I'm saying? So like, I don't go in thinking like it's going to be like best friends or whatever, you know? But I think what's most surprising to me is that he has like a photographic memory and he remembers everybody's lines. He just knows them. You know, and something so serious as this, especially for the relationship with his family, he was oftentimes in between takes, like not serious at all about any of it, which was cool. And he was just more so teaching me about the art of, I think it's an art to being like a movie star. I think in school we learn the art of acting, the craft of it, but we kind of leave out that other aspect. You know, because that's really a lot of times in school they try to teach you, it's not about this, it's not about that, it's about the work. And so what happens when you've dedicated all this time and effort to the work, but you don't know how to maneuver the industry parts, excuse me. And he's very specific about, this is what you need to have. You need to have a hair personal makeup team. Like, these people protect you. They care about your interests. These are the perks. This is what your team should ask for when you're doing contracts. Things that I didn't even think about, that I didn't even know existed.
Yeah. The nuts and bolts of this business.
Yeah. Yeah.
So are you enjoying this? I mean, is this like, you know, this ride that you're on right now, is it cracked up to, you know, what you hoped it would be? The recognition, the fact that you're out there and, you know, doing it.
Yeah. That's a great question. It's better than I probably imagined, because I didn't know how to imagine this far. You know, everybody says, oh, well, what do you want to do next? And I kind of have general ideas, but I feel God always ups whatever it is that I dream. So I can't even put a cap on it, you know, so there's that. But then also realizing that happiness and freedom and everything starts with yourself and it starts in the mind. So I was doing these movies with people that I always admired and I was depressed, you know? And so learning about what it means to actually have happiness is not anything outside of you. And I think if we go into these things and our dreams, and like, I, for my whole life, I've been tunnel vision towards acting. And then you get there and you're like, do I feel like I can feel happy in the moments when I'm doing interviews like this, or when I'm on carpets and stuff, but what's happening in the downtime and in between? And that's when the real work comes in terms of, once you're happy with yourself, when you're not working, then you can be happy and accept even the parts of it that don't feel so good. And I think because I'm in a better place with my own self, it makes all of this even better.
Yeah. And then it all leads to being in that theater at the premiere, watching yourself on screen.
And just being able to fully enjoy it, because you worked on the other things that wasn't so happy, that had nothing to do with anything outside of you.
Well, now I have my six rapid fire questions for you. So, We're going to jump in. Okay, first off, what is the question people ask you the most? Let's see if I already asked you.
Oh my goodness. The question that people ask me the most is, how come you look so young? You're 31? Y'all look a day over 19 or something like that. That's probably most asked question.
Wait, are you 31?
I am. I just turned 31.
Oh my God.
Yeah. My birthday was March 22nd, like a week ago.
Happy birthday. And also, why do you look so young? Okay. Okay. So number two, the TV show in history that you wish you were a part of. Is there a show that you love growing up that you kind of wish like you had been in, or?
I love Lucy though. Like I love, but maybe I could have been Lucy. I don't know.
Yeah, why not? I like it. What would people be surprised you watch, either guilty pleasure or not?
Okay, so I would normally say The Vampire Diaries because that's my thing. I would watch it over and over again. I'm so team Delena. But lately, I haven't been able to get back into it. So I've been watching Love is Blind because I'm romantic. And to believe that Cameron and Lauren could find a love like theirs is just amazing.
Have you watched all of season two?
Yes, I did. Yes. And Jared and what's her name? Ayana.
Yeah,
I
like them. Yeah. Where'd you fall on Shake? Is he?
You know, from the beginning, I was like, maybe they should run. So and then he started like opening up, and I started being like, oh, maybe that was wrong. But then everything kind of hit the fan. So I don't know.
Yeah. And then if you've watched the reunion special, yeah.
Oh, maybe. I watched that. Yeah. No comment. Yeesh.
So what hobby would you be doing if you didn't have your day job?
I would want to do aerial work, like gymnastics and stuff like that.
Oh, wow. That's cool. And that could be a part of your day job too. So
yeah, I know. That's why I love acting, because I get to tap into different things. I used to play basketball a lot and had to choose whether I was going to act or play basketball. I'm so glad I chose acting. But now when I get a role where I'm like really playing basketball, then it could be a lot of fun.
Very cool. The food, one food you can cook.
Oh gosh. Well, and this is supposed to be rapid. I could cook this quinoa salsa shrimp dish that my stylist actually taught me how to make. I love it a lot.
Sounds delicious.
Yeah.
And finally, besides your own show, what other show are you rooting for this Emmy season?
To be honest, I don't watch a lot of TV. I don't even know what's going on right now.
It's all good. You're too busy making it. I understand.
Well, yeah, but also like when I go home, I don't turn on the TV. Like, and I literally only got a TV in my apartment because I knew that my mom and my sister would come to visit me and they would need something to do. Yeah. So I don't really watch a lot of TV. I really do love to read and journal and play piano. I started learning piano. I made my own cover of Song Cry by Jay-Z, where I rap my own lyrics and use that chorus. And I love doing voice lessons once a week, piano twice a week, and just different things keep my energy, like, you know, keep my mind going and my creative self-expression.
That's Dominique Fishback, star of The Last Days of Ptolemy Gray, now streaming on Apple TV+. After the break, Mr. Mayor star Bobby Moynihan. From Los Angeles, this is the Award Circuit Podcast. And we're back. It's the Variety Award Circuit Podcast. I'm Michael Schneider. On NBC's Mr. Mayor, comedy icon Ted Danson plays Neil Bremmer, a retired business tycoon who decides to run for Los Angeles mayor on a whim. And he wins, much to the chagrin of his own daughter, as well as city council member Arpi Meskimen, played by Holly Hunter. The Office comedy, from the minds of Tina Fey and Robert Carlock, also features Bobby Moynihan as press secretary Jaden Kwapis, a character who's a bit naive but extremely loyal.
Jaden? It's Emily.
Emily, hi!
Hi! You're even cuter in person.
So are you. I Googled you back. I guess that elderly woman in Van Nuys with your name isn't you. I'll probably still be a gentleman and take her to the audiologist on Thursday, but just as friends. Wasn't kidding.
Of course you remember Bobby Moynihan from Saturday Night Live, but he's been busy in recent years with a voice acting career, including DuckTales, Summer Camp Island, Star Wars Resistance, We Bare Bears, and so much more. And then there's the second season of Mr. Mayor, a rapid-fire comedy that also is probably the most well-researched sitcom ever about the politics of Los Angeles. When I recently hopped on the Zoom with Moynihan, we began by discussing just how busy he is.
Yeah, I'm trying. I'm not good at standstill.
Yeah. No, it doesn't seem like it. I mean, you've got like several day jobs. You're right. You've got a sort of illustrated book coming out. You got an animated series. You're voicing on 12 other animated series, I think. So there's a lot to talk about, but I want to kick things off with Mr. Mayor, because I'm just so glad that Mr. Mayor is in my life, and I'm so glad it's back.
Thank you.
And
me too.
There's something about also just, you know, I think the show is universal. I think, you know, it can be appreciated everywhere, but there's something about living in LA that really appreciate some of the nuanced jokes that you guys do, that, you know, like a tossed off reference to Americana at Brand, or, you know, the empty soup plantations, or, you know, like, it is like the usual sort of Tina Fey, Robert Carlock special of just like rat-a-tat-tat jokes. But
this season feels so much better because the first one, we shot one episode, took 6 months off, you know, then we had, you know, the pandemic. It was like we shot 9 episodes over 2 years, and then this season we shot them all right in a row. So this season feels like a real season to me.
Yeah, that's so surreal to be launching a show just in the middle of the pandemic and sort of
having... the day you really want to launch like a light political comedy is the day after the insurrection.
good timing.
Yeah, the night before season 2 started, we were like, okay, we just got one more night, we just got to get through one more night.
That's been tough, and I know the show had to go back and reference the pandemic in the pilot, which originally wasn't there, right? But then had to be sort of like worked back in to explain what was going on.
Yeah, a year after we shot the pilot, we went back and shot new scenes to incorporate the pandemic and also make things make sense, because like it was like, well, people wouldn't do that anymore. Like I remember I was on Dodger Stadium, was on the pitcher's mound at Dodger Stadium, and someone came over and was like, Tom Hanks has this thing called COVID. And I was like, would you stop scaring everybody? Everything's gonna be fine. Like and then the next day we were done.
So surreal. And here we are 2 years later.
Yeah.
Some things have changed, some things haven't. But so in terms of, because you guys then had that special Christmas episode sort of in between. And it's sort of, that was, I guess, a little bit a part of season one, but almost like a bridge between the two seasons. So how did the production work for you guys in terms of when you were down, when you were able to come back, and then when you were able to really focus on season two?
We stopped for a while. We came back for season, when we found out about season two, we came back and we shot 11 episodes right in a row, just as quickly as we possibly could. And one of those, like the seventh one we shot, because we didn't know till halfway through, was the Christmas special. We found out we were going to do a Christmas special, so we just shot it halfway through the second season and they aired it first. But it was nice because, like you said, it was like the Christmas special was more like, hey, do you remember this show that came out in the middle of the pandemic? Where we're coming back and here's the characters again. So it felt very nice. Yeah, I was glad we got to do that.
I mean, thankfully, you know, it is, yeah, like I mentioned, tough to launch a show in this day and age. But when you have a Ted Danson at the helm, who is, of course, comedy royalty.
Yeah.
And this whole fun cast. But kind of let's back up and tell me about the origin story of how you got first involved with Mr. Mayor and when you first were approached about this project and what that early process was like and sort of like, yeah, of course, Tina, I'll do this.
Yeah, I mean, that was it. I got a phone call one day from Tina just saying, hey, do you want to grab dinner? And I was just like, okay, what's happening? And she kind of laid it out to me that they were thinking about doing this show, and they had this part named Jaden for me. And it's funny, it was always Jaden Kwapis. Like, that never changed. And that she had me in mind for this, and I couldn't believe it. I was the happiest boy in the world. And then it went away for a little while, and then it came back. Like a year later with Ted Danson, and it was this kind of brand new thing. And then Holly Hunter got involved, and I was like, are you kidding me? Like, what's happening?
Yeah.
I once I heard Holly Hunter, I was like, I'll believe it when I see it. Like, this is insane. And then, yeah. And then we just started doing it. And then the pandemic happened and we stopped.
Yeah. it's kind of like Holly Hunter. Like, we've never seen her before. Still, I'm like, it's hard to believe that she's playing this role and is willing to put up with this amount of nonsense half the time on this show, surrounded by comedians who are used to this kind of nonsense.
She loves it, and I think she loves it, and she's so good at it. It's crazy. I think Arpy's one of the best characters on television, especially by the end of this season. Like, they do. It's just so great. She's so wonderful. I love everything I get to do with her.
We'll talk about Jaden real quick, because obviously he's sort of the bumbling comic relief, but every once in a while you're reminded, oh no, he's got some smarts. He's got some political savvy, even if maybe it's accidental savvy. But talk a little bit about this character and sort of his role in this office dynamic.
I feel like he's like in the Gump family somehow. Like, he just has this fantastical life where he just keeps stepping into awesome things. He's a little Forrest Gumpy. He always ends up doing well. He means well, but he screws it up. But in the end, he'll accidentally figure out, you know, how to do something completely right. And that's what this season is. This season is just like Jaden realizing he can't be the bumbling idiot all the time, and he's actually gotta, you know, if he wants to, you know, work for the mayor and do this and be an adult, he has to move out of his mom's house and get his life together. And that's kind of what this season's about for him, or you'll start seeing episode 4.
Because you're starting to see so far in the season, so there's this I team that comes in, and who really wants to instill some discipline to the mayor's team, and of course Jaden is right there, target number one, and suddenly his coworkers, who really, you know, are frustrated, annoyed by him, at the same time sort of feel a loyalty to him and also an affection toward him and sort of start to rally around him.
I think there's part of him that, like, they want to keep him around so that they're always not the worst at their job, but they also truly do care about him.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like a, you know, your workplace comedy where they have become sort of an unusual family.
There's a lot of awesome moments like that coming up in this, and that they're all weirdos, but they're each other's weirdos, and they do care about each other.
And you have one of my favorite moments from early in the season 2, where you do, you know, mouth vacuum the keyboard, which.
I remember thinking, how do I do this without inhaling? Like, how do you physically do this without making it disgusting? And the prop guy was kind of like, you don't. It's real clean, man. I was just like, all right. I guess I got to just do this.
Yeah. I got to go method. If there's some crumbs in there, just suck them up. And
Tina knows that the SNL in me just goes, just do it.
Is there something about that SNL ethos that you're willing to kind of do anything, or what is that sort of?
I'm realizing now at 45, yes, that there was part of me that would have done anything for that show, and there's part of me at the age 45 now that knows I wouldn't do it again.
It's a young man.
But for Tina, I would do anything. Yeah. For Tina, I would literally do anything.
And there is, you know, we talked about that Tina and Robert Carlock sort of like rat-a-tat-tat. I mean, there's so much stuffed into these scripts, and so much the asides, the jokes within jokes. I mean, these are dense stories. What is that like to actually shoot and to kind of keep up with when it's just like rat-a-tat-tat, so much going on?
It's awesome now because, like, working with Ted, who's somebody who just, he's been doing television for, you know, 50 years. He knows what he's like, you know, he's so smart with it. And Holly too, as far as just the acting chops go. But when you're working with them, like the scripts have been getting longer and we're like, wow, the scripts are getting longer, but then we only have 22 minutes like to get this, but we're shooting, like we're overshooting so that we can have so much stuff because like, we'll be shooting a whole scene and we go like, we know this isn't getting in. They're only going to use three lines from this but they cover all their bases in an amazing way. And it is dense, but we overshoot stuff and they kind of cherry pick the episodes from there. I feel like there are things, but there are definitely things when we are shooting where I'm like, this is not making it. This was just like their pipe dream of like, can we get this joke that takes five sentences to get in? Like, can we get this in? And we'll know it's not going to get in and it's not there when the episode comes out, but it's like, oh, we tried. Or a lot of the times we'll do some lines and then they're like, just say it faster. It doesn't matter. Just as quickly as possible.
But you must be interested when you actually get the screener. Like, so I wonder what this episode actually looks like.
Oh, 100%. But I also think as far as anything else I've ever been in, I don't look to it. I'm excited to see it as a fan. I don't look to it to go, oh, what did they use? Because all of it is gold. I don't have to improvise that much when I'm there. And I love improvising because I get to the end and I'm like, I don't know if I can really top anything in that. It's nice to get to an end of a scene and not go, well, let me do these five jokes just in case. It's like, it's already there.
It's already there. Just,
man.
That's funny. So what was your sort of experience with Ted Danson like before this? Had you worked with him on anything?
I had never worked with him before. I met him once. He does not remember this. I was backstage at Conan. Like, we used to do those bits at Conan O'Brien, just like, I was a guy who, like, I ran by in my underwear, just like dumb thing on Conan, like during some comedy bit.
Yeah.
And I was there one day and Ted Danson was getting a coffee and I was bartending at the time. And I had just finished making a coffee and he picked it up and he handed it to me and I went, cheers. And he just went, ugh. And he kind of just walked away and I was like, no, I'm a bartender. I'm just used to saying that word. Like, it just so happened you were on Cheers and he was not happy about it. And he walked away from me, but he does not, I haven't told him that, but I highly doubt he will remember.
That is hysterical. And now when you say Becker.
Yeah, exactly. yeah. No, he's the best now. Now I've had dinner at his house. I feel much more comfortable with him.
Yeah. I want, like, one of my like favorite Hollywood couples is him and Mary. And I just want everything to be perfect for those two.
Agreed. Agreed. She's a fascinating lady too.
So now that you've gotten to know Ted, you sort of like, what was that like? Cause he is sort of, you know, he's that one of those like comedian like legends who has every show he's been on has worked. Like, I can't think of a clunker that he's done. Even, you know, we joke about Becker, that thing went for like 8 years or something.
He's fantastic. He's just a professional guy. He's a really nice professional man, which I don't think you get in this business a lot. It's just like, he's somebody who's been doing it long. He's quick. He's good at it. He's funny. He's charming, and he's not an a-hole. He's a wonderful, nice guy. I remember in the middle of season one, shooting one scene in particular with him and Beau Bridges, where they were just kind of yelling at each other, and I was just standing there going like that's Ted Danson and Beau Bridges. Like, what am I doing right now? How did I end up here? And you do get a lot of that with Ted, but he is very, very good at going like, it's not that weird. Like, just pointing out, like, he's just like, yes, I'm Ted Danson, but like, you know, we're all people. And like, he's very, very good at that. But yeah, sometimes you do look at him and you go, that's Sam Malone. What the hell's going on here?
Yeah. And there he is with the nanny.
That's the best part about this. It's the best part about this business, SNL and this show, is just like, do you ever want to meet one of your legends? Well, here they are.
So now as you go around Los Angeles, are you starting to think a little more about LA politics? Are you starting to notice like, oh yeah, that's the Parks and Recreation Department. Oh yeah, that's the, you know, have you sort of like by osmosis started to think a little bit more about how this city works?
Yes, definitely. I get super weirded out whenever they have a real press conference because I had no idea that they modeled our set after the real LA City Hall. So like, when the guy did a press conference from City Hall, I was like, it looked like a scene from our show. I was just like, why are they, like, who is this? Like, I was like, what is happening? That's confusing to me. But yeah, no, a little bit. I should be much more into politics, but it definitely has. I notice the buildings a lot more.
No, your set, actually, they did a fantastic job.
Oh yeah, it's crazy.
Authentic. And I like, it's one of the shows where you do have plenty of extras around, so it does feel like it's a real office. It always find it funny when you have an office setting and there's only like the four same people. It's like, do they not have workers? Do they not?
It was weird during COVID, but also they're the same. It's all the same. Like all the people that work in the office are the same from the beginning, and they're slowly getting lines, and like it's wonderful. It's yeah, they're all the same people. So like our staff has been our staff since the beginning.
Yeah, and I like that because you start to notice it is the same people. It's like, oh yeah, this is a legit office.
Yeah,
by people. The other amusing thing, of course, is that now that Rick Caruso is running for mayor of Los Angeles, a billionaire, older white man who has decided to, run for mayor, sounds a little familiar.
Yeah, that's all we need. it's interesting. It's fun to see where, I don't want to spoil anything, but seeing where this season is going and stuff. Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah. Art imitates life, it's the way things go. So, well, we mentioned that you're a very busy man and I hear you just so much on all the shows that I watch with my kids these days. DuckTales, We Bare Bears. It's a lot. And now you have your own show.
A very beginning of the pandemic, I put out this thing with Comedy Central Digital called Lofi. I've been doing a lot of animation. I've been an animation fan my whole life, and I just wanted to continue to work and also learn how to do animation. So I did this thing called Lofi. It was like half improvised cartoon, and I learned right off the bat you should never do an improvised cartoon. It's very hard. Yeah. As far as like just sifting through 10 hours of improv for every episode, but and then they were kind enough to let me try again, and I got to do this thing called Lightning Wolves. It's sort of an homage to like those 80s cartoon shows like Thundercats and He-Man, G.I. Joe, that were like, you know, there to teach you life lessons, but they actually were just, their sole purpose is there to sell you toys. And the Lightning Wolves, the characters slowly realize in this series that they are toys and being played with by real children, and then they attack those real children.
I love it. And it sounds like you got some of your pals to help you voice some of these characters. So that sounds like it was a blast.
Yeah, I've been really enjoying the process of it. Animation is super special. And I called in a lot of favors. And it's much easier to record something in your closet and ask your friend to record something in their closet than it is to ask them to come to a studio and act.
Yeah. No, that's cool. And so you've been doing a lot of these voiceover jobs, like I mentioned. So it did sort of one beget the next? Did this sort of become an avalanche? What was sort of the entry point for you to really get into this space?
One of my very, very first jobs I have ever got was like a friend of mine, Jackie Clark at UCB, was working on a cartoon. And she was like, do you want to do some voices on this cartoon? And I was like, are you kidding me? And I did that. And I remember like that was just more like I learned how to do the process. And then I did a couple little things. But then when I was on SNL, I got a phone call out of nowhere from Pixar. And Dan Scanlon was like, I saw a sketch that you were in and I really thought you were funny. Would you want to play this character in Monsters University? It was like two lines. I came in and I did it. And then they were like, we really like that character. So they made me like the sidekick to the bad guy. I got to do a couple more. And then a couple months later, I did Inside Out. I was in Inside Out for a couple lines. And like after that, it just, I kind of went like, oh, this is fun. And I just sought it out. And then got enough things here and there to keep it going. And then DuckTales and We Bare Bears. And like, I think that kind of, I kept seeking it out. So I think people went like, oh, he wants to do animation. Let's hire him. And they did, which was nice. And now if that's the only thing I did for the rest of my life, I'd be happy.
Well, it's, you know, you were smart even before the pandemic. Like I'm
sure you
do most of these in your home now. So
yeah. Yeah. I have now have a recording booth upstairs.
So that's cool. So I do have a couple of rapid fire questions for you now.
Sure. I have one for you. I just love your, I have all the Lost action figures in my house too. I'm so happy you do too.
Yeah. Yeah. From season one, I got the hatch up here. I've got all the different characters. Yeah.
Here, wait. Oh, geez, something crazy. Oh no. My headphones are not plugged in.
So yeah, I'm very much a Lost apologist, I guess is the word. I loved every minute of it, so no haters. Look at all that. Look at
that's one of the Virgin Mary statues.
Look at that.
I got a whole bunch of Lost. I'm a huge Lost fan. That's Arma Beers from the show. I have a problem with Lost.
You got some Apollo bars, I'm sure.
I do. I have to go back to New York. I have a storage unit in New York that just has the fish biscuit machine from Lost, from when they got caught in the polar bear thing and they would press the button and the fish biscuits would come out. I have that, and I got it in like an auction.
Oh yeah, I remember that auction.
They were selling I went crazy. And I'm still dealing with it years later.
That's great. I like, by the way, was that the museum? Was that that looked like the vault with the
Yes, it's literally behind a fake cabinet. It's where I keep all the weird stuff I've collected.
All the fun stuff. I think we need like a photographic tour of that at some point.
It's pretty nuts. It's pretty nuts in there.
All right, so rapid fire. So the question that people ask you the most, maybe I already asked you it, but what do you get people asking you these days?
Nothing, because I don't leave the house. Now it's, what is it like to work with Ted Danson and Holly Hunter?
There you go.
And it's always wonderful, and I always change it because it's very easy to.
Yeah.
There's a million great things about them.
Do people also ask you to do any voices? Any
Or they ask me for SNL tickets and I have to explain to them that I haven't been on the show for 5 years. Yeah.
That makes sense. Do you still watch SNL? Do you?
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah. I was a fan before and I continue to be. Yeah. I don't catch it on Saturday nights anymore.
Like the rest of America, right?
Even 8:30 in LA is late for me. I feel like.
So what's the TV show in history that you wish you were a part of?
Lost. Easily.
One of these days they're going to have to reboot it, right?
I have ideas. Please call me. Yeah. We have to go back.
Yeah. And when they finished the show, I used to talk to Damon and Carlton all the time about this. Even they've said like it's Disney. Disney knows IP. Of course they're going to bring it back at some point. So
yeah.
What would people be surprised you watch? Guilty pleasure.
Recently, like I've been too much. I had to like tell myself, like, you know, I'm super into, like, I had to do for Mr. Mayor. I had to do a TikTok. Like Jaden was doing a TikTok in season one and I kind of didn't know what it was. So I downloaded TikTok just to kind of watch it. And now that's all I do. And I can't seem to get off of it. But like, I didn't realize that I was going to end up watching like a guy who like grows his own stuff in his garden, or like this guy that helps cows on a farm. Like, like I'm fascinated by weird specific microcosm worlds. I enjoy it.
Yeah, yeah. You and the kids, you know. Yeah. That's what everyone's watching now. So what hobby would you be doing if you didn't have your day job?
Drawing, like comic books, or like sculpting, maybe. Making action figures, making, like, I don't know, something.
That's cool.
I always wished I could sing, but I can't. Well, I could carry a tune, but my wife's a Broadway singer, and I go, oh, no, I don't sing.
No duets. No.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. What food can you cook that you're proud of?
I'm an okay cook. I can cook most things. I make a nice stuffed chicken every once in a while if I have to.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm okay. I'm like a fine chef. I'm not an idiot, but I can boil water.
Yeah, good enough.
Yeah.
And finally, besides your own show, what are you rooting for this Emmy season?
Oh, everyone else, because I'm a mensch and I can't help it. what else? Oh, gosh. I don't like watch any television. I go, who of my friends has TV shows? I was about to say Vanessa Bayer, but her show hasn't even started yet.
But it will be, and it'll be
out. Yeah. Well, good. Then her. Then definitely her.
That's Bobby Moynihan, star of NBC's Mr. Mayor. And that's it for this edition of Variety's Award Circuit Podcast. The Award Circuit Podcast is edited by Drew Griffith, and Michael Schneider is the producer. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. Also, head on over to Variety.com and click on the Award Circuit tab to find the latest Emmy predictions and key races, as well as your daily fix of news, analysis, and reviews. Until next time, for Jazz Tanque, Emily Longaretta, and Clayton Davis, I'm Michael Schneider, and we'll see you on the circuit.